I never used to do this, but for the last year, or maybe 2 years, when I write my sermon out during the week, I always put the collect for the day at the top, because I use it to see if there's any themes within the collect itself. Collect meaning the prayer that Father Emerson sang to begin the liturgy. It comes from the Latin word collecta, which means to gather the community, so it's the prayer that sort of focuses us and gives us some way of thinking about the day, the particular Sunday, and one hopes some of what we read in the Bible connect to the collect for the day. And I looked at it this morning, this week it didn't pay a lot of attention, and it said, "Grant us, Lord, not to be anxious about earthly things, but to love things heavenly." And I thought, after the week that we've had in the financial markets, that is a very fine prayer to pray for anybody who has resources that they're struggling to determine what in the world are we going to do with them, or how do we get them back. So maybe the readings that I'm going to preach about also have something to do about how we think about abundance and God's generosity, and how we focus on the future and God's purpose and plan for us personally and for each of us as a community of faith. If the Green Sundays are about the cost, the nature, and the ways and the means of Christian discipleship, part of Christian discipleship has something to do with coming to grips with the absolute reality that once we have made some decision to be part of the life of the church, or even if in a vague sense we believe that in Jesus Christ we have found our greatest place of safety and assurance, we need to begin to understand and live into the reality that we're in it for the long haul. And when that is the case, we begin to say, what kind of challenges and opportunities are in front of us when it's the same old, or perhaps we're confronted with leaders who have feet of clay, or perhaps we have some difficulties as time goes on because of our life circumstances, believing that God is actually present to us on a regular basis, or that what I say over and over again is in fact true, that God loves, accepts, and forgives us unconditionally, and that that is the starting point of our Christian faith and life, the heart of the gospel of Christ. And these readings today have something to do, I think, with that, because people struggle as their zeal begins to wane, or they now face real challenges after they're over the sort of heady conversion experience that happens. I was thinking when I preached at 9 o'clock, some of you may have heard of somebody long dead now in this country, but well known, Clare Booth Luce. Clare Booth Luce converted to the Roman Catholic Church in her adulthood. And she was married to Henry Luce, who owned Time magazine. She had some influence in this country, and because of that, she was granted a private audience with the Pope, with Pope Pius XII. And so she was in the papal apartments having the private audience with Pope Pius XII, and she started in her usual way, full of zeal, and finally Pius XII said, "Mrs. Luce, Mrs. Luce, I am a Catholic." If you ever saw a photograph of Pope Pius XII, he didn't look like he was taking any prisoners. So the onslaught must have been pretty substantial for him to say, you know, "Hold it." So once we get over that phase, what's going to happen? I use this to segue now into the situation on the ground with the reading from Exodus. I love reading these readings from the Hebrew Bible. We had a lot of Genesis and the great matriarchs and patriarchs of the Old Testament, and we're now beginning to read about Moses and about Exodus and how the people of Israel experienced their great liberating moment with the Exodus and their freedom from oppression and captivity, which will define their self-understanding as people of the covenant as they move, and will have such power and resonance for Christian people who read these sacred texts as they begin to experience the teaching and the mighty works of Jesus Christ, and say, you know, our sacred scriptures have all along shown us now that God's purpose and plan for us is going to see how we live into our humanity and how we take these teachings and use them as a template to mature our own spiritual life, our own development as we grow in grace and seek to know God's purpose for us. So here's what we've got. The people of Israel have left now, and they're in the wilderness. And their enthusiasm and their deep commitment to leaving slavery and oppression is beginning to wane. And they're out here. And we have, by the way, we're beginning with this particular reading to read. We'll start now as we move forward to read some of my favorite Old Testament passages, which are known in biblical scholarship as the murmuring passages. The people of Israel are murmuring. The whole congregation of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. Everybody who's been in any position of leadership knows all about that. All about it. So they're out there doing the best they can do. And they're here now with the complaining and the murmuring. And Moses complains to God. He realizes, of course, that the complaints are really directed to God. But since he and Aaron are there, they're the most convenient scapegoats for this discontent, this fear and anxiousness. How are we going to feed ourselves? What are we going to do? We're out here in the middle of nowhere. Now, here's the thing that happens to all of us and why this reading is so important. All of us, when we're under pressure and anxiety and difficulty, tend to focus ourselves on the past. The people of Israel are now looking at their captivity through rose-colored glasses. Any of us in the helping professions have had to work with people who have been allowing their past to define them, either in positive terms or in negative terms. How would that we mean that? It would mean in positive terms, when I went to my 25th high school reunion, I met people there for whom it appeared that the high point of their entire life was high school. Good night, nurse. I was leaving high school at a dead run. Good, I could not believe it. You know? So it's been downhill from there. Or people who have been the victims of abuse or bad serendipity have used the past to define who they are and the place that they find themselves in now. Because you know what? Even if it's bad, you go with what you know. So what do Moses and Aaron do exercising the leadership that is necessary in circumstances like this? They refocus the people on the future. They say, look into the wilderness. It's a metaphor for uncertainty, ambiguity, darkness, things that are not clear. Look into the wilderness. And what do they see? The cloud. And what's in the cloud? The voice of God. And the voice of God says, I know what you want, and I'm going to provide it to you. I'll feed you. So they describe what it is that they're going to get to eat. You may be interested to know that in the ancient precursor to Hebrew and in Arabic today, manna means, what is it? Well, what it is the excretion of a bug, a locust-like bug that lives on a particular plant in the desert. It is harvestable only in the morning before it melts, and it is considered a great delicacy. If you were traveling in the wilderness and needed to survive in the desert in that part of the world, you would be well served to pick that stuff up and eat it because it's full of carbohydrates and sugar and nutrition, and it will keep you on the journey. So it's real stuff. A little globule, like, you know, you can pick it up and eat it. I guess Ewell Gibbons, you remember stalking the wild asparagus? He would love stuff like that, right? I once saw him on the Dick Cavett Show or Johnny Carson or something, and he said, and one of them said, you know, Ewell, in your newest book, you have a number of recipes where you make things from the stuff you forage in the wild. But a number of these recipes call for the use of an electric blender. How in the world are you going to use an electric blender in the middle of nowhere? And he said, it's not a problem. I just tell the people who ask me about this to plug it into a wild current. The people of Israel are sustained, turned away from focusing on the past to the future, where they will receive a new self-definition, a deeper and fuller understanding, personally and corporately, of God's will and purpose for them. So this is about how the people of Israel, as the community of faith together and individually as people struggling to know God's purpose, understand the nature of maturity. A definition of maturity might be taking responsibility for your own emotional being and destiny. Maturity is taking responsibility for your own emotional being and destiny. And Moses and Aaron, as leaders in that community, are faced with the continuous responsibility to do that. You know, when you and I get some clarity, we go along okay for a while and we go like this. And so this is something you've got to continually remember and remind yourself of. That's why Christian people come to the liturgy all the time. Even though it may appear to be repetitive, it holds before us the deep things of Christian faith and belief and the promises of God, and reminds us of God's abiding presence and care. And so when you exercise any kind of leadership in whatever area you're called to do that, and every one of us have some area where we exercise leadership, think about turning people away from focusing on the past and on the future, where you will hear the voice of God and the promise of God and the guarantee of God's unconditional acceptance, love, and forgiveness. The reading from the Gospel today is about the generous landowner. I don't know what the technical description of the parable is, and in biblical scholarship, the names of these parables change over time if you keep current with the scholarship. So I'm going to say the generous landowner. And here's the thing. Actually, you know, this resonates with real life things. The landowner is a vineyard owner. So he goes to the place where you hire help, and he hires a group of people that he agrees to pay the going wage to. And I'm thinking about the harvest season in the wine country, wherever it might be now in California, or for that matter anywhere in the world, you know. When the grapes get to this much sugar, and they're this ripe, you've got to pick them. It's called bricks. You 23.5, let's say, for Chardonnay. When it gets like that, it's got to be picked. So you hire people, you bring them in. Then you realize, geez, we got to get this in, we don't have enough. You go get some more, and you bring them. And it sounds like this vineyard owner had to do that several times. So finally he hires the last group of people. There's only an hour left in the workday. And when it comes time to settle up, he pays the people who worked for 1 hour the same amount of money that he agreed to pay those who worked for a full day. Well, some of those who worked for a full day are miffed. They believe a great injustice has been perpetrated. In so many words, the vineyard owner says to those who complain, "Do you begrudge my generosity? Do you begrudge my generosity?" You know, intellectually, I think most of us can understand what preachers say about God's grace as God's favor freely given without regard to our merit, but we don't believe that. We believe that if we've lived a life where we've dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's, and we learn that somebody whose life has been from at least time to time a complete shambles, and they get in, it's a bitter pill. We just don't think it's right. And this is what happened here. We think God is going to operate according to the way we want God to operate. And God operates the way God operates. Now, the situation on the ground for Matthew was that there are people worried about who are first and last. Matthew is in a Jewish Christian synagogue that has now become 80% Gentile. He is a Jewish Christian. He probably was a rabbi. So the people who were first were the Jews. Now there are 80% Gentiles in there, and it looks like they're going to be first. Or maybe the Gentiles are now running things, and they believe they're first, and it could be that the Jews are going to be first as they come now back to the realization that Jesus was the Messiah. You can interpret this either way. But the thing is that everybody gets in. And that's the point. Most people then didn't believe that. You know, they believed that the worthy ones got in, the ones that weren't worthy didn't get in. And this is a parable about the unlimited abundance and generosity of God. Now, the only way you and I have of appropriating that great and powerful truth are through the commonplace activities of our own lives. So we're called to practice generosity. And we're called to practice generosity with our talents and abilities, with our treasure, with how we deal with other people in relationship. And this is a parable about how that might happen. So I guess this week the lessons to be learned would be don't focus on the place of remembered good times, but understand that God is continuously calling you forward where you will receive as you engage in that movement and process a deeper and fuller understanding of God's purposes for you. See if you have an opportunity to practice generosity. Don't keep score. That, I guess, is the other thing that's part of this too. That isn't going to work because God's grace is unconditional. And so in one sense, while there is an admonition and a lesson in today's gospel, it is also the good news because all of us share in God's abundance and generosity. Amen.